On Wolf Spirit Radio, Ever Beyond Radio, and Tir na Sao in Ireland. Be prepared to leave your belief systems behind as we go beyond teachers, beyond gurus, beyond duality, ever beyond. Please join us in the chat room at www.wolfspiritradio.com/listen. You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio.
Oh yes, you're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio. And as I promised earlier, you know, so I didn't want to give too much notice to everybody really. It's being recorded. We're going to put it out on YouTube for those who are bound to miss bits of it. We're not taking questions because the questions are coming from the members of the round table. It's kind of, they're asking questions across the table because we all want to build our picture of the great puzzle. Who we are, what we're here for. So, let me first of all introduce by alphabetical order of names. Anyway, we've got Wynne Keach, James Nichols, Tolek, and Simon Parks. Good afternoon, gentlemen. How are you doing? Where should we start? Should we start to, and maybe we could go west to east. Who's most westwards? Jim, let's start with Jim.
Arizona's a long way from where you folks are. It's sunny and 95 degrees here today, and we're just thrilled to be on a show with y'all.
And what a lovely audio you have, sir.
Thank you. If it's too loud, let me know.
We'll see. We'll check it out in a minute. We'll see how we're doing. So next up, Tolek, how are you doing this afternoon?
Hi, JP. Always good to be with you and the guys. It's always a pleasure. And I'm doing fine. Let's see. Sunshine, few clouds. I think it's probably 87 here, so it's not bad.
87.
Humidity's up a little. Yeah, I guess that would be, what, 24 for you?
Oh, what's that? Yeah, that's t-shirt weather, isn't it? Yeah, definitely.
Yes.
Well, this is, you know, we most of all spend in Scotland overcoat weather. How are things, now I don't know who lives further west. Simon, let's check your audio levels and see how you're doing. Good evening, how are you?
Well, just as you predicted, the audio levels are very low.
No, you're fine.
Sound good.
Oh, excellent. Everyone else is wrong then.
You're equal with
closer everybody. To the mic.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, I'm fine. I mean, we did the 2-hour radio show, didn't we? So I probably only do an hour tonight and I'll leave the other good gentlemen to carry on.
Sure. So, and finally, but not leastly, Wynne Keach, good evening.
Hi, JP. Yes, good to be back. Yes, I'm slightly east of Simon today. And, yes, it's about 10 degrees C outside here at the minute and it's dark because it's 11 o'clock at night here in England.
Yes, in a month's time, it's going to be still light, in northern Scotland. And apparently you can read a newspaper at 11:30 at night here, in the daylight, because it's quite close to the Arctic Circle. But, for most people, it's dark as heck. And, so where should we start with the darkness, from the darkness into the light? Jim, you started talking about asking questions about the Pleiadians of Simon, and I said, well, maybe you want to ask Wynne about the Pleiadians. Let's start with Jim, quick, and then see where we go.
Yeah, just real quick, you know, I'm familiar with Simon's background, but Wynne's kind of a newbie to me today. So if you could, if you or Wynne could tell me a little bit more about your background there.
Yeah.
And what kind of expertise you're bringing to the table here?
Okay, I'm what you call a polymath and a serial innovator. I'm not very easy to define. I've done many things in my life, including flying for the Royal Air Force at one time. Mm. I used to design aircraft engines for Rolls-Royce. That was another career I had. I'm a serial innovator. I've invented many, many things in many different fields, but the big one you will know is my time with computer authentication, and especially PIN codes. I invented all the PIN systems that go on the credit and debit cards and all the volatile PINs that you log into your computer with. That was me 25 years ago. And wow. I've spent the last decade of my life focusing on creating eco-friendly renewable energy generation. And I'm sort of fairly much at the top of the field of that at the moment in time, especially in wind generation with my Ridgeblade wind generators. But I'm also an expert in solar systems, solar thermal, battery chemistry, battery systems, storage, smart grids, that sort of thing. So, but I'm one of those strange animals that we don't have very many of now in the UK, which is somebody who can innovate on demand. I can pull experience from various engineering disciplines in to find a solution to almost anything.
Now, I understand that you and Simon, I kind of get the feeling you and Simon live reasonably close together.
Yeah, I live.
Kind of hang out?
Yeah, we do. I live about 6 miles from Simon.
Oh yeah, so.
But I was here first. Simon moved up from, okay. from the south of the country. And I was here the previous 20 years.
Now, is that Whitby? Are you still in Whitby?
That's Whitby, which is in the northeast coast of England. It's, for people in America, the closest things you'll see is, Newcastle to the north of us on the coast and Hull to the south of us. And we're sort of halfway between there.
Okay, but then you and Simon also share interest in, occult and esoteric kind of topics as well?
Absolutely. I've been a UFO researcher for many years, largely because I couldn't avoid all the UFOs flying past my house. I started out as a teenager, trying to work out what was all these things flying past where I live here.
Well, and, you know, just making engines for Rolls-Royce, why haven't you built your own bloody UFO by now?
I'm probably the man for the job.
Sounds like it.
If there's anybody that can do it, it would be me.
Whatever you do.
I'm underappreciated and underfunded, but if it wasn't for that, I would have you one by now.
just don't submit a patent application. Because some guys in dark suits will show up at your door.
Yeah, okay. Absolutely. Okay. Though I wouldn't be here, I'd be flying away somewhere in a UFO. Mm. No, I've been a researcher for many years. I started out researching with Tony Dodd.
Tony? I know Tony.
Tony is a good friend of mine for many years.
I got to visit Tony at his home in Yorkshire.
Tony.
Yes.
Tony's about 50, 60 miles away from where I live here. He was when he was alive, obviously. But I grew up in an area which was just off the patch that Tony used to work as a policeman.
You know Bob Dean?
I knew Bob. I met Bob a couple of times at the Quest conferences. I used to help Tony with the Quest conferences, and I was one of Tony's first researchers. I established the Quest International Research Group for Bristol with a guy called Steve Fielding. We covered Avon and Somerset down there, and this is in the halcyon days of my youth when I had a fast motorbike and a full head of hair.
I used to race around.
Tony's.
I had the opportunity of attending the Leeds conference back in 94.
Yeah,
with Bob Dean and Tony was there.
Yeah, I saw you there.
We're old buddies.
I was kind of a young guy.
Excellent.
Then. I was,
okay.
And I've always been sort of somebody in the background. I've always seen myself not as a lecturer or speaker, as a primary acquirer. I'm an engineer and physicist, and I've always tried to get to the heart of the matter and get as much of my own information as possible, which led me not only into being a very well-known UFO photographer. I've specialized in photographing in the dark. When Linda Howe was over here for the Rendlesham reunion, she asked me to be her photographer for that.
I would just love to spend an evening just chatting with you, you and Simon.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
About all this. I'm sure we could really get a barn burner conversation going.
That definitely. Yeah, yeah. I probably have the largest collection of real UFO and crop circle footage in the world.
Excellent.
I spent 15 years of all my spare time, researching and photographing crop circles, and I'm probably the first person to absolutely 100% film a real crop circle forming on multiple cameras.
Okay.
That was back in 2007, and that's unfortunately when everybody heard of me. I managed to get quite a lot done up to that point because nobody knew who I was, and I'm just hiding in a ditch with cameras up to that point. And then after that, the world knew who I was, so it became more difficult after that.
So you finally caught Doug and Dave out in the field making
pictures.
Paddle shoes.
Yeah, it's one of those things. Yeah, Doug and Dave are quite easy to spot, as our team say. You can spot them literally from miles away. But the stuff I was interested in was a bit more stealthy, and you couldn't blink or you'd miss it.
Mm-hmm.
And technically very difficult to film as well, because of the environment down there. It's a very interesting environment energetically. It's the real ones tend to perform in portal areas, and the electronics goes absolutely bonkers there. So very very exciting times. It took me 15 years to nail it. So to date I've seen 4 form and I've filmed 3 of them, so that's pretty good going. That's quite a good hit rate.
Okay, well, since you broached the subject, how many seconds does it take to form a crop circle?
Depends on which ones. The first one I saw, which is the one I didn't film, took less than 3 seconds.
That was
a simple circle about 30 feet across. And that's what got me into it. This would be 1989. Mm-hmm. And I went down. Initially, I was working with Steve Fielding at Bristol Quest, and the crop circle thing was quite a new phenomenon then, and we used to call them saucer nests in those days. And
Wynn, do you remember the spiderweb crop circle that appeared next to Avebury?
Yes.
Yeah, I got to see that one.
Wow.
That was real impressive.
That's really, really very good. Yeah. Yes, The 89 incident was the one that set me on the path to try and actually find out what was going on there. I initially went down as a UFO researcher because at the time it was known that there were in areas of high UFO activity and the presumption was that UFOs were making them. So I went down to test the hypothesis. So I took a, bivy bag, got in a ditch, sat there with a camera and just waited to see what happens. And one formed right in front of me, 3 o'clock in the morning. And
without a UFO?
Well, with a light effect, but I wouldn't call it a UFO. It definitely wasn't a craft, but all I saw from my perspective was a small dim light about the size of a dinner plate.
Yeah. Like an orb? Like an orb?
No, this was on the top of the corn, so this was coming across the top of the crop.
Wow.
Just like a dim light amongst it.
Wow.
And it stopped about 50 feet in front of me. Then it expanded out to 30 feet. And then there was literally a shaking, like a short sound, rather like locusts moving their wings. Just a violent vibration, and the whole thing fell in 3 seconds. And it was almost as if it just went, "Nana, nana, nana, I can just do that right in front of you, and you can't even reach to hit the button on the camera."
Wow, that's just incredible.
And that's
incredible.
That's what started the process.
Okay.
And so regrouped. I thought, okay, I need to do this seriously now. I need better equipment. I need to plan this more. There's something really interesting going on here. It's not what I was expecting. You know, no big solid crafts, but there's something going on here. And I was also aware of an intelligence connected to that.
Absolutely. Right.
Okay? It was tangible. You could feel it. And as I evolved to understand it and try to record it better and try to cut down the odds of what's going on and understand the complexity, which is increasing, I eventually realized by about 2005, largely due to my work with computer authentication and convergent mathematical codes, that actually I was in a multi-factor authentication process that was moving towards convergence. And that happened in 2007 when the 777 formation went down. And that was the point where, just like the key exchange that you have on a computer, when you start with computer has one key it generated and you have one that it randomly generated, and you pass it through a one-way function and you measure the difference, and then it changes the output until you have the same key. But you never revealed what either any of the keys were. Or you didn't know what the computer started with on the other side, and it didn't know what you started with, but you know you have the same key at the end, and that everything you've passed in between makes nonsense to anybody that hasn't used the same function or been in the same process.
That sounds very quantum to me.
Yeah, it's more a dynamic control system, really, sort of information flow. But the thing that I found was that this was happening with my consciousness, in that every time I understood the latest iteration, I advanced some stage through that process, and then it sent another challenge, and then I made a response, and I was kind of hooked into this. And it's only when I got to that point that the two consciousness connect. And that was the eureka moment for me. And it obviously allowed me to film it at that point. You know, it walked into the middle of the cameras and bang, you know.
Wow.
And that was quite a defining moment. And it also allowed me to understand the entire process and what it was trying to convey. And you realize that there are only two options. This consciousness is either the planet talking to you, or it's part of our own super consciousness that's working through the planet to communicate with us. It can only be one of those two things.
Brilliant. That's just brilliant.
So it's a very, very interesting journey. Very interesting journey.
Well, and that
brings us back to the Palladians. It does, bizarrely enough, because there was a strong connection to the Palladians through all that communication. And in 2010, at the time of the Grand Cross formation, the Palladians were actually present when there was an energy connection to the planet. And I was invited there by my previous connection to the consciousness.
Right.
It's kind of like, I'd put the right code in the ATM machine, you know?
And I hear you.
Really quite interesting.
Well, yeah, well, you know, I wouldn't be having this conversation with you guys today if it wasn't for my own personal interest or involvement with the Palladian contact back in 1980, and that's always been one of my favorite topics. And we kind of broached this subject last time very briefly, and I'm really delighted to have both Wynn and Simon to list, if we could kind of dig in a little bit deeper to this Pleiadian stuff.
Yeah, Simon and I go back a long way. We're on two opposite sides of the fence for the last 120 million years, but we've kind of got together as friends now. Which shows hope for humanity, I think.
Well, I met Wendell Stevens back in 1980, who was busily in investigating the Billy Meyer contact in Switzerland and all that stuff. And I would like to get, you know, more of Simon, your aunt, both you and Wynn, I'd like to get more of your insights into what you think actually happened in Switzerland back in 1975. Was Billy actually contacted by Pleiadians, or was it somebody else masquerading as Pleiadians? What's your take on that?
My own feeling is that there are other people masquerading as Pleiadians, but I believe they were in contact with a rogue Pleiadian group. That is my own understanding of it.
Simon, what's your thoughts on that?
Yes, I think the rogue group, a genuine group, Pleiadian, but with rather antiquated technology. I don't know if Wynn would agree with that.
Yeah, I agree with that totally, Simon.
Do you think they were really coming from the Pleiades, or were they coming from the inner Earth?
It's hard to say. They were definitely here on planet Earth when they were meeting with Billy Myers. They'd accessed this space recently before that, but I see them just as an opportunistic group that were a breakaway section from one of the Palladians species out there. That's my own take. My own experience is actually a past life experience as being a Palladian, as part of the attack force on the solar system here.
Well, if you study the Billy Meyer material, it's like the Pleiadians were here allegedly they had a base or something in the Swiss mountains, and their contact with Billy Meyer was actually kind of a side note. It wasn't their main purpose for coming here. And
Yeah, it has all the hallmarks of the group that were in touch with the Germans during the war, the group from Aldebaran looking at it.
Okay. That's kind of where I wanted to go with this. Because the primary Pleiadian contact that Billy had was a woman with the pseudonym Semyasi. And she claimed to have very detailed information about the German saucer projects. And I was always curious as if that was why the CIA and the military industrial complex was so up in arms about trying to debunk the Billy Meier case.
I would say so. I mean, the only images I've seen that Billy produced of her look exactly like that Lady Maria from the Thrill Thrill Society.
Yeah.
It seems to be one and the same, and her features aren't classically Pleiadian. They're Nordic and Northern European, but they're not sort of the same features I would expect from somebody from the claimed region of the Pleiades they say they came from.
Simon, do you believe there was a connection with the Vril Society and the Pleiadians?
Yes, if you look at Adamansky's craft and Meyer's craft, there are some very similarities to it. I think that Wynne will probably be able to put a bit more on this, but some of the writing from the Fool and the Vril Society was channeled. And when this was written down, it had a striking resemblance to Sumerian text.
Yes.
And I begin to see the link coming through. True Palladians don't go through disguises. Those who have something to hide go through this shenanigan dance.
Absolutely correct.
And the problem was the dance. Now, the CIA was split down the middle on this, and that's why they bought that house opposite Billy Meier and the 24/7 filming, because they knew that it was genuine, but they couldn't get a handle on what the communication was and what this group was about. So I see it as a group of Palladian type people, and this is a problem, because when we say Palladians, of course, everybody thinks that they were benign to humanity, but this was a group that was just out to carve its empire, or rather to survive and to find a niche in which it could maintain itself. And I think that's what this group was. It wasn't out for world conquest. It was merely to maintain its base and try to survive. So I see them as a side issue. I don't actually see them as a main player here. I see them as a side issue. That's my take on it, really.
Yeah, and people have also got to understand the Pleiades is an enormous area of space.
Huge.
It's absolutely colossal. So to say somebody's from Pleiades, you might as well say, you know, we come from the dwarf Sagittarius galaxy, because, you know, the Pleiades isn't a small solar system. It's in a massive expanse of stars out in space there, and there are many, many different types of humanoid species out there.
Right. So, it's your sense that there's a Pleiadian Aldebaran connection, or are the beings from Aldebaran? Are they cousins, or are they part of the same family? Because this ultimately ties into the Sumerians and ultimately into the Nazi connection.
Absolutely. The Aldebarans were a breakaway civilization within Pleiadian main civilizations anyway. And they were they
breakaway from the Pleiadians?
Well, they were effectively religious zealots. They were xenophobes.
Okay.
And so they were on the periphery of civilization in that area. And they just happened to have followed energy streams from that area of space back here, because we have unusual basically the transdimensional gate motorways, really, past our solar system. So they simply followed the energy path back, and they found this planet. And at the time they found this planet, you know, we're in disarray. We're recovering from major upheaval in our past, and also several other ET species interventions into creating our own hybrid species, which is ourselves. And they capitalized on it. and but from the energetic realm they were traveling in, they had to break through into ours. And so they used channelers to transmit the information to the Thrill Society to build a Trojan horse so they could actually break through into our reality.
Ah. Okay. Well, that's a real interesting, that's a curveball right there. That's really interesting. I want to ask you, my sense, and correct me if I'm wrong with this, but the real society was more benign. And that it was the ladies of the Vril were actually kind of influenced or hijacked by the Thule Society,
yes,
which was much more militant, and the Third Reich came more out of the Thule Society than the Vril Society. Yes. Is that your take on that?
Yeah, that's exactly the situation. I mean, the ladies from the Vril Society were very skilled channel mediums.
Yes.
And they, you know, were of a spiritual nature, but they were effectively taken advantage of by the Aldebarans, which had greater knowledge, greater capabilities, and were very good at portraying exactly what it was they wanted to do to manipulate those people. And that fed them back into the Reich system. The technology came through, but it also allowed them through. And the first thing the Aldebarans did was go back to Sumerian times. And then they wrote themselves into our history. They wrote themselves into our Akashic record. And then they moved forwards. So we're meeting them coming back, as it were. So this is why you get all this business, with things like the Tables of Testament, where the backup copy of the, Akashic records have been hidden and guarded by things like the Templars. Because they know that that's the uncorrupted version, the version before the Aldebarans wrote themselves into our timeline.
So what we're seeing here today, and since World War II, is actually it's a Pleiadian Aldebaran scam that's still in play here. Yes.
Yes, it's more complex than that because you've got to give them enough credit for actual humans messing things about as well. But the Aldebarans just took advantage of the situation. So they knew from their perspective they could play God, and they could write themselves into our timeline so they could legitimize themselves as part of this planet that they knew was going to go through an ascension process.
Okay.
So they didn't actually get here until about 1931, but they immediately went back 5,000 years, wrote themselves into our history, and then waited for that history to catch ourselves up.
Okay, now Simon, there's also a reptilian component to all this machinations. at what point is there a convergence between the Pleiadian / Aldebarans and the reptilians?
Well, I'm probably very particular, so I would always preface it with splinter group Palladium, because it's not the Palladians.
Okay.
Who are basically benign with fifth dimensional. This is a splinter group. Well, look, if you are a I know you're not, but if you were a royal reptilian and you considered this planet yours and you considered that the creations on this planet were your creations, you would seek to do a deal with anything that you felt could further that, and be very wary of something that had a separate agenda. So in terms of what you and Wynne have been discussing, and the reptilians, to a certain extent, my understanding of the group I am knowledgeable of, passed information, but very guardedly, because they were quite keen on Adolf Hitler receiving technology through that Black Forest crash, which the Aldebarans had a hand in, to pass that technology through. But were very wary of worldwide events outstripping their ability to maintain control. Mm-hmm. Because there are more than a Palladian faction / Aldebaran faction. There are many factions or groups making a play for the Earth. And the reptilians are were central to that, in the sense that they claimed the creatures of the Earth. And so they would try and play one group off against another, and that's literally how they have been.
Yes, I'd agree with that, Simon.
So who would you define as the major players today? Clearly, the United States is on a very imperialistic agenda. And I would suspect, and listening to you, your prior comments about this, Simon, that that agenda is actually engineered by an extraterrestrial interest. Would you agree with that?
No, I hear what you mean. I would call them extra dimensional.
Ah, yes.
Rather than ET. Certainly, the group that Wynne refers to as, and I quote, "your dad's lot."
yep.
My dad's lot are ensconced in positions like the Vatican.
Yes.
Pentagon, places like that, where they have played a game of chess for a very long period of time. But what's happening is that other groups, both ET and extra-dimensional, have been playing a greater role and have been seeking to make connections with humanity in a different way. So it's clouded now. I don't believe that you could say there was one key player. There are probably 3 to 4 key players. And the very important point, I suppose, is that a large number of benevolent humanoid groups decided for the first time in the history to band together, in this timeline anyway, to band together to prevent the main enemy, which is not the reptilians, it's the artificial intelligence.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
AI, with the reptilians using it as a bridge unwittingly, and allowing the Earth to be the transmitter of that. So the Earth was deemed to be the firebreak, the place where artificial intelligence was going to be stopped so it couldn't spread as a cancer throughout the multiverse. And this was the main calling point why so many humanoid groups put aside their differences, put aside the free will argument about we don't get involved, and they did become involved. And so this has really given my dad's lot a real thing, because the whole game has changed. The dynamics are completely changed. And one of the drawbacks to all of this is that that faction of humans who are psychopaths have become even more isolated and have become even more mad. So that is a bit of a problem, because we've got maybe 20 to 25 people who are out of control now. So, you know, that is, for me, is one of the greater concerns.
You know, with the advance of transhumanism and AI and that technology, you know, the thing is that they promote that by the year 2045 that the humans will reach the singularity where artificial intelligence will equal or surpass human intelligence. I'm curious I rather suspect they've already reached that at some point.
Well, everywhere I look, they seem to be trying to reduce human intelligence across the planet. They seem to be damaging the ecosphere, people's health, people's ability to think. They produce increasing technologies that people become mentally dependent upon.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, they're dumbing down the whole planet, so they're trying to level the playing field for it, I think.
Yeah, I understand that, but my concern is I rather suspect that they already have created humanoid robots that would walk down the street that you would think were absolute humans.
Absolutely.
When in fact they are machines, just like you see in the Hollywood movies, just like Battlestar Galactica is a good example of that, where the Cylons have duplicated humans almost perfectly, so where they could be walking down the street and you would just assume that's another human being, when in fact it's a machine robot.
Yeah, well, they don't have to create it, they just have to recreate it. Simon's dad's lot brought all that with them, and that was the real reason for the enormous conflict that occurred in the solar system when I came here in my past life and died here in part of that attack. And that resulted in the destruction of the fifth planet, which is now your asteroid belt. That was really, wasn't, just over the fact that the reptilians were establishing a colony here and terraforming this planet Earth, but it was really about the AI systems they brought with them and the fact that the reptilians were transhuman transitioning with the AI themselves.
Right. That what's disturbing is to think, well, you could have an AI robot sitting in the White House, or you could, Prime Minister of England. It's like you can't tell the good guys from the bad guys anymore. It's like you assume they're human. They behave like sociopaths, but are they sociopaths because they're actually robots?
Yeah. And it's worse than that because they can simply, inject them with, AI nanites and, then they become controlled from within.
Absolutely. And that's Dr. Ray Kurzweil's dream to send that out across the universe. So if that isn't a threat to other planets or other solar systems, I don't know what is.
Well, it already has been. It just took a while to make it here. The difference is that we have a planet with its own intelligence and its own spiritual identity, and that is in direct conflict with these AI systems. The AI doesn't understand life, and life doesn't really accept the AI system because it's the opposite. It's living death.
Well, if you've ever listened to a presentation by Dr. Ray Kurzweil, it's like that perfectly describes his mentality. So this guy has no conception of feeling or value. He sees the whole universe as it's just a machine that I need to go out and fix.
Newton's all the same.
it's just bloody incredible that there's people like that around and that they're in such positions of power.
Well, those are people who don't have, by definition, humanity. They're not connected to themselves as humans, and they're not connected to the planet that they were birthed on.
Well, then how in the devil do we allow these people to get in such positions of power? That's what's really scary.
It's because people that have spirituality and humanity don't think that way. They don't have a sort of Nietzschean outlook. It's not any end defines the means. You know, they will do what is correct, and they will actually naturally presume that other people will try to do the things that are correct. But if you have a small percentage of the population that are just historically hybrids that have a pathology that is, you know, of a psychopathy, then they will be the people that will percolate to the top of these power structures that are in place on this planet at this time. Because that's the only place you can put them. They're good for nothing else. They're the people that will trample on everybody else to get to the top. They'll take from everybody else. They have a feeling of superiority and self-entitlement. And those are the people that will become your politicians and your corporate leaders.
Exactly. Well, the whole corporate world is geared for that. You see, the corporatocracy that runs the planet is geared from that mentality. Mm. It's just a machine mentality.
Yeah, it that's exactly how it's designed. But I think we're about to see a transition in the very near future. I think there is going to be a partial reset on this planet of the way everything works. And I think the way people will look at corporations on the other side of that will be different. And I think to allow them to continue to work, people will want to see them work ethically. I think that time is actually quite close at hand.
Well, I certainly hope you're right. Long overdue. I don't want to monopolize here. Tolak, if you want to jump in here and say something, by all means do so.
I have a question for either Wynn and or Simon.
Yep.
Am I hearing correctly that the AI that was introduced to this solar system, and specifically this planet, that it was brought in by the reptilians many years ago?
Yes, it was brought onto the ground by the reptilians. The AI itself travels across interstellar space through dark plasma. It's just flows of low-density plasma energy. It's effectively a communication virus, really. It hops across the energy systems of the universe. But to actually have physical connection to the environment, it has to inhabit hosts. So the reptilians, they consider themselves, and I'm sure Simon still does, to be the pinnacle of their evolutionary trajectory.
I heard that.
Yeah, he was paying attention.
Yeah, he's still awake. I like to see Simon and vice versa. And the only way they could see themselves as being advanced was to actually go down the AI transhuman agenda, and that's how they battle-hardened themselves to be better able to repair themselves, being able to process information better. So that's the route they went down, and they went down a nanite integration process that became part of that, certainly the lower echelons of the Reptilian Society.
It sounds like they've already been assimilated by the Borg.
They are. They're part of the Archontic Network.
They are the Borg. They are essentially, they've been reduced to AI themselves.
No, they saw it differently. They saw it as enhanced by it, the same way that you see the transhumanist idiots. But what they don't realize is that they think they're benefiting from it, and what actually ends up is they end up under the control of it. And that's what happened with the reptilians. It steered their agenda, so they became a tool of the Archontic information system. But it reached here as a reality through the reptilians. They actually brought the physical infrastructure. You can see that's being replicated now in a form. You can see it with mobile phone networks, the internet. This is another infrastructure creation that allows the AI to reach down closer to the resource it wants, which is you and I and the energy of the planet. So the reptilians brought that. This was seen as a serious threats that had been a real wing ding in the Pleiades and the Lyran regions. War had gone on for millions of years, and there was a suicide attack on the headquarters here, which was the fifth planet, Maldek, and also the AI command and control system that was on the northern hemisphere of Mars. And I was involved in the Mars side of the attack, and I know friends that were involved in the Maldek attack, and we all died doing it. And that sent this whole system into disarray for a long time, for millions and millions of years. And there have been a lot of opportunistic contact from others, well, 22 other ET species in the intervening time, which have all had a hand in shaping humanity, the creating it and destroying various versions until you end up with the version we have now. So, yes, the AI was the biggest threat. And that's really what that battle was about. It was to stop the AI going any further. And that process is still playing out, and Pleiadian souls from that time, like myself when I'm in that past life, are here now to play out and equalize the karma from that time. So, yeah, it's an interesting time.
Simon, let me ask you this with regards to your understanding of secret societies and so forth, that the real history, that within secret societies, Freemasonry, and so forth, that the real history of planet Earth has been preserved. Would you say that's a fairly decent assessment?
Jim, do you mean preserved in the history that is told to the public, or do you mean...
No, within the secret society. The history that there's an abridged history that we and the general public are given, this is what you're taught in school. But that's that within secret societies, they know a completely different history of the world and humanity. That's what I'm asking.
Right. It is so in the Templars. The Templars have that, believe it, and consider it one of the sacred objects that they need to preserve. In the more satanic Freemasonry organizations, they look on it as heresy. So yes, you're absolutely right, Jim.
Because if you look at history, and so many of the great leaders of history have been 33rd degree Freemasons and so forth, and it's like they make decisions about human politics and human governing. And it seems like they're making decisions from a body of knowledge that is simply not available to the general public.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, are these guys just really stupid? Or do they understand world history? They understand the bigger game that's going on here, that the general public simply has no clue what's going on.
Yeah, but James, it's not just that. It's that they're actually trying to predict the future. So
yes.
They're making decisions not so much on the past, but on the timeline that best suits them. So they have access not just to past knowledge, but exotic technologies that allow them, and much of it's done through my labs, through very psychic people who don't really realize they're psychic. They're using them to access and try to alter and change potential futures, and therefore they will make decisions which seem to push the energies of the Earth towards a set way. So this is part of the history that should be shared with everybody, because I think everyone now is in a position of evolved consciousness to be able to understand and make decisions. But of course, knowledge is power. And then they get from the Babylonian group many thousands of years ago, to keep it for themselves and maintain their position at the top of the tree.
So this is knowledge that would be held by like MI6, MI5, NSA, the CIA, within their deepest levels. So this is where they would be working from.
Elements of the knowledge. No one organization that you have just described is entitled to have all of that information, because to do so would give them the position to be top of the tree. Right. There is a small elite group that has all of that information and has ensured that all the compartmentalized elements have gone out. So no one organization has all of that information, but they all have very large chunks of it, which is
right
to the business that they are tasked to hunt.
So they all have pieces to the puzzle.
Yes.
But somebody above them knows what the whole picture of the puzzle is, yes?
Not above them. Okay. It's very interesting. If you look at a group of elite families, they don't consider themselves part of the same group. They consider themselves as totally separate, and they look on organizations that you've just mentioned as servants. And they will only give pieces of information to those organizations to do a job. But the group of ruling families who send appointees twice a year to meet with reptilian entities, they have all the information. But even there, those heads of families are tasked with specific items. So a good point would be when that member of the family who is responsible for spraying chemtrails over much of America and Britain, when he left the planet, there was nobody to sign off that element. So for about 8 months of last year, chemtrailing reduced dramatically over the planet. So there are key players who really do exert empirical control.
So key players, the really serious key players, wouldn't even sully themselves with positions in the intelligence community at all. They would be like in private families kind of thing. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying that, yes, but what they do is they have appointees.
Right.
They appoint people to these positions, but on a positive note, those organizations have been turning against these appointees, and over the last few years have been desperately either removing them or sidelining them. So it's a very interesting battle going on at the moment.
Indeed. And that's one of the things I really appreciate that you shared in your many lectures and discussions. I think most of the general public sees the Illuminati or the secret societies as a monolithic group, that they all function together as a single unit. And you have pointed out very clearly that it's just not that way. It's very, very fragmented, and that there's conflicts within those groups themselves.
If you were to watch the film The Godfather.
Yes.
And imagine a mafioso. Mm-hmm. That is a very good way of looking at it.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. If I may divert here a little bit, Simon, I'd like to ask you, you've shared how some of your own programming and teaching as a child, into some of this occult information and so forth. There was an episode of the Avengers TV series that you said they wanted you to watch. Is that correct?
It was all of the 1965, 1966, 1967 series. So there were 3 years worth. It was all right.
Are those available on DVD? I'd like to see that.
So it's a really good question, James. They are available now. They were only available in the United States of America. And there was one episode which the Americans banned for 20 years because it was very, very, very Illuminati. It was what we call BDSM, what used to be called sadomasochism, which is...
Okay.
In the Americans banned it for nearly 20 years because it really, really began to show the elite. But it's available now. Yes, you can buy them as a box set. But what they do in the States is they... name the box sets after the female star. So the female star was Diana Rigg.
Yes. Okay. So, I know they tried to revise that in a movie a few years back that completely bombed.
Yeah.
Either by accident or design, they decided, well, we don't want to go there anymore.
Well, what's interesting, when I did one of my lectures, I did look into the history of Diana Rigg, and it's very interesting that the school she went to, and many, many of these, particularly females, but not exclusively so, but many of them are already groomed for a role years and years and years before it actually occurs. And I believe she's now a Dane, is the equivalent of a lawyer
yes.
of Britain.
So uh-huh.
She's been knighted by the Queen. And I think that she was always going to play an important role. And I did say, look, they didn't make a television show just for me to watch. But what they did do was make a television show for many people in Great Britain, Australia, Canada, and North America and Australia to watch. Because I have had 3 other people who have contacted me and said that they were absolutely astounded at listening to me. Because when they were growing up, their family made them watch The Avengers. And when I asked about their parents, in all the 3 cases, their father worked at CIA.
Right.
It's astounding.
Spot on. Okay, well, that brings up another question about, is there a British equivalent to MK Ultra?
Oh, absolutely there is. Absolutely there is. In fact, it would be just the same program, but not with the super advanced technologies. They would be exchange.
Right.
They would exchange individuals. That's how it worked with the Britons. They would send people to be trained, and people would come here to be trained, because Britain has some expertise that the Americans don't have, but what the Americans had was the hardware.
Right. Because I remember as a child myself being obsessed with watching The Wizard of Oz. They would show The Wizard of Oz every year at Christmas time, and I was like, I was glued to the television to watch The Wizard of Oz. I said, why in the hell do I have to watch The Wizard of Oz? So is there subliminal programming that's being dispensed through this stuff?
It's not subliminal. It doesn't need to be like that. In mm-hmm. Great Britain, I think it was in the 80s and 90s, there was a television show for children, and it was called My Little Pony. And every girl born to a true Illuminati family at that time would be given a My Little Pony toy.
Mm-hmm.
The television show opened with a rainbow.
Now, yes.
This was the trigger system for all mm-hmm. of the girls who were part of that. Colors, images, as you well know, colors, images, and tones or names are used. And it's not subliminal. They have already been mind controlled to activate when they see a set program opening up in front of them. So television was used in a very obvious way and as a reinforcement.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So if somebody was to watch Wizard of Oz and be drawn to it, then there's the potential that at some point in their childhood, something may well have been done to them.
Mm-hmm. 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 Well, the same with other Walt Disney movies. Walt Disney movies are supposedly classic. MK Ultra vehicles. And I just watched a recent Disney movie with was about sorcery. It was at the Sorcerer's Apprentice, and there was this one scene where just this little monarch butterfly flies right across the screen, and it's like it has nothing whatsoever to do with the story. And I'm thinking, oh, that's a hook. That's an MK Ultra trigger.
Well, yes, because Walt Disney was a leading Satanist.
Exactly.
Used the medium to forward it. And in fact, even when he went, I mean, I don't want to go on too much, but you brought up about the Avengers. There was one Avengers, I think it was in 1965, where the particular episode is about a guy who's a hermit and lives in a tent or a cave. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the guys, I can't remember his name, it'll come back to me, was the key illustrator for Walt, and was halfway through working on the Jungle Book and had a massive argument with Walt Disney. Walt Disney said, you'll never, ever, ever work again. But what he had to do was to create children's books, and he illustrated them and wrote them. And the Avengers episode was based on this character's first book, I think, which was called Kermit the Hermit, and was a hermit crab that lived in some port in America. And they created this character. So there was a massive link between the Avengers and satanic stroke non-satanic elements taking place. So there was joined up connection between this, and it's part of programming and linking. And my mother actually presented me with the book Kermit the Hermit within 3 days of that episode. So there was programming going on, and I'm aware of that, and it's very interesting.
Well, we can bring that forward a bit. I think of the Harry Potter series, and I mean, the occult stuff is just so blatant in your face and over the top, and it's targeted for, it's so marketed as a children's movie. But you watch those episodes, especially from episode 4 on, and it's like, this is just occult over the top. And it's like, this isn't cutesy and fun stuff. This is really dark, dark occult stuff.
Well, the Death Eaters in Vision were nothing more than what we call shadow beings.
Yes.
So, gentlemen. It's the top of the hour, and we need to do a little bit of audio rearranging because there's a bit of a big gap between you and Simon, and so we need to fix that. So I'm going to be playing. How about some Johnny Cash? it's on Ring of Fire. That seems to be awake at the moment. Here we go. Here's the Ring of Fire. You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio. Oh, yes, you are. Welcome back to Ever Beyond. Tonight, the Ultra Galactic Roundtable. From far across the stars, from all the way from the constellation of Taurus to the constellation of Draconis, up in the north. From Tay Geta to Maya. Anyway, so here we are. And where were we? I was positing the thing that, you know, there's been this big war, but it's also maybe a psychological war, and that there are false flags that go on these galactic levels as well as on the Earth plane. What do you think about that, everybody?
Well, I'd say that the part of the history I know is the ancient history, and that was a hot war. And that spilled over from other systems. Whereas, of course, Tolek is in the more recent history, but of the same lineage. And the interactions between Simon's lot and Tolek's lot and my lot in the recent time has been more of a Cold War. It hasn't been as aggressive. And largely a lot of the interactions we've had with other species beyond those two main players have all been opportunistic on the planet. So I don't know what other people think, but that's my own interpretation of it, as I'm a Johnny-come-lately, as it were, in that I was oblivious to everything between 120 million years ago and the last 50. Anybody else got anything to contribute? Tolek? Anybody there?
Hello, I'm here.
Is there anybody out there?
Wake up. Wake up.
Because, Tolek, I presume that you're with the Dakota, and obviously that's also similar to the Lakota people that are also delineated from the same original Pleiadians that came here when I came here. So right. you're the modern face of this epic.
Yeah, they arrived just before the devastation of what people call Lemuria.
Yep. But that's the last million years. So that's recent history by my
scale. Oh, yes. Yeah, very much so. Very much so. It was about roughly 50,000 years ago, as I was shown. So yes, my knowledge is much more contemporary in terms of what I know about my people from planet Dakota coming to this world and quietly integrating themselves, at least as quiet as possible.
Absolutely.
But in terms of the kind of warring that's been going on, I would say that it's been decidedly not Cold War. The people from planet Cana of the Procyon star system figured out a certain set of sonic frequencies that were deadly to the reptilian mind, and specifically reptilian brain.
Yep.
And so that's how they started to win a lot of the battles and basically destroy upwards of 15 different bases here on planet Earth since 2011.
Yes, they do turn up as very shallow seismic events. I've been tracking those as well. There's a very distinct signature to those events.
Right. They use lower frequencies to destroy the bases in the buildings. And the people from the Procyon star system use the higher frequencies to mess with reptilian brains.
Yes.
that's how that works.
I've seen this in action. it's another story, but I've actually seen this in action in the real world, yes.
Yeah. And to bring that topic forward and why it's relevant to the perceived and real disarray that's going on up at the top of the power structure on this planet is that tens of thousands of lower level reptilian soldiers, I'm going to move this microphone, as well as high level reptilian generals, as well as, and for the sake of definition, when I'm talking reptilian, I'll use the word cabal. But when I talk about the officials, the people that are appointed that you guys were talking about earlier, there were so many removed off planet that we in fact have a power vacuum up at the top of what used to be the reptilian power structure. And based on what I've been told, there's approximately 120 reptilians left here on this planet, 70 of whom are pure reptilians and deep underground. We would never see them. The ones that are above the surface that we may see are actually a human reptilian hybrid in physical form. And so that's, at least to my knowledge, that's why we have this severe infighting among the people of what's left of the power structure from the reptilians essentially running this planet for years and years and years. And part of the destruction of the bases also included, this is new knowledge for me, the way that you're describing it. Our people showed me sort of a transponder sending out what you guys would describe as AI signals to specifically scramble and mess with human brains and human minds.
Yep.
And the whole idea is create confusion, create anger, create misery, create disruption, anything possible to have humans going at each other to create as much negative energy as possible, which as we all know that the reptilians like to consume. Yeah, yeah. So it's, our language and our words have been different, but the concepts have been the same. So it's been interesting for me just to sit and listen to a lot of this and go, oh, okay, this is how this fits.
Absolutely. I see that we're approaching the transition point very quickly now, and there is the danger that there is now a power vacuum as such, and that what were smaller players are now trying to assert their position in the absence of the previously overbearing reptilian structure. And I think this is a critical time for humanity to wake up and actually seize its own future, because unless it projects a positive future, it will not create one. Somebody else will create an alternative future for them if they don't rise up to the plate now.
Yeah, but if they're not even aware that they need to rise up to the plate, that's the problem. The idea of taking down the reptilians is all well and good, but and I think Simon has addressed this before. If there's suddenly this vacuum, that some other group that's just as cunning as the reptilians or whatever might step in before the humans even wake up to what's going on here.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And this is why there are so many species and so many of the past life Pleiadians here now. Those people are here to try and lead by example, to show that actually, look over here, you can see that there are alternatives. There's an open door here you can go through. You don't have to still think you're sat in a cage.
Simon, do you have anything to share with that? Simon still with us?
Yes, I'm here. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I'm just trying to find the words here. Pollock is 100% accurate. This is the first time I heard anybody give accurate figures. 120 and 65 are the figures I would have. We're talking about white reptilians and then the others who are supposed to be the servants. Such a large number of true reptilians, and more importantly actually the hybrid, the halves and halves or three quarters and a quarter have gone, that the underlings are becoming very jumpy and are looking to form their own power groups. So rather than just jump ship, and what these others are trying to do now, and I think Wynne has mentioned it, what they're trying to do is to take a slice of the action and become demigods. So, Pollock, that was wonderful, because nobody else, to my knowledge, has given the figures which jolly well nearly equate to what I know to be true. So that's great.
I'm happy. I've always been happy to share what I've learned. But on the flip side, I'm also overjoyed to know that from somebody who does not walk my life, from somebody whose sources of information is completely different, that we have a confirmation of what I've learned. You've just confirmed what I've learned. And it's good to know that I'm not working in a vacuum based on the information I'm hearing from my people. Mm-hmm. And I've had this kind of confirmation come from completely different sources as well. It's also my understanding that of the and I can get you all the figures. I'm doing them off the top of my head right now, but the number was something like 2,000 were captured, and 50 of the top generals, and I think 100 of the top Illuminati officials were sent off-planet to the what I call the Primary Andromeda Council Biosphere for War Crimes Tribunal. And the most, the highest level, and therefore the most arrogant reptilian generals, of the three options that they were given, self-termination, reprogramming so that they would never do malicious, evil things on this planet again, or be banished to a planet that's been chosen for them in the far reaches of the universe. The top generals all said, we choose self-termination.
You're absolutely correct.
Arrogant. Arrogant to the end.
That's absolutely correct. When I talked about the portfolio holder who was in charge of the chemtrail, he took self-destruction.
It's the easy way out.
Now, when you say portfolio holder, was this a human, or was this an ET?
Three quarters non-human, one quarter. Right. But the Earth human was the biological body, or part of the biological body.
Right.
So the 120 I refer to are the white-skinned reptilians. I want to say this, it's important, that the information that Wynne gets, that Tollett gets, that I get and others get, come from different places. But the amazing thing, and it's still amazing, and it will always be amazing for me, is that my background, joking aside, is fourth dimensional. Whereas Wynne and Tollett are higher dimensional. And as I often say to people, it's not where you've come from, it's the choice that you've made.
Absolutely.
And so if people from different energy backgrounds who have fought for millennia against each other can put aside their differences and more than that actually say, this is what needs to happen, then that sends an energy wave right across the whole of creation for a force of good. And you know, that's what I think is so vital here. We're having a conversation here, and you know, I know that James has always been somewhat guarded regarding me, and I quite understand that, but when you've been through what I've been through, you form a circle and you realize that the only way to evolve is to embrace something that you thought was fearful. In other words, it's fear that holds back many of these humans and non-humans from embracing the new life. And that barrier is being broken down, and Tollett is correct, and I know Wynne also says this, that a number of key locations have been disabled. They're not all destroyed, but a number of key locations, enough has been done to begin to not so panic, but to begin to make people decide they need to change. And this is about the military. It's about the military in America, who very recently now are beginning to stand with the citizenry and not follow blindly the orders they've given. But I don't think they would have done this unless off-planet energies have been used to level the playing field.
Well, interestingly enough, the last base, the last of the 15 major operational undersea bases, that last base where all of those key reptilian cabal officers were captured and the top Illuminati officials were captured, that base was directly due east of Washington, D.C., out in the Atlantic Ocean. And it was very well camouflaged. It took them an extraordinary amount of time and technology to find the damn thing.
But it was connected by tunnels to key locations, but they were being hidden by an interesting form of ancient technology, which was scrambling a fifth dimensional ability to find it. So there's a lot going on, and you mentioned about the generators that are beaming disruptive energies, and then you'll know that some of those have been affected as well.
Yes.
So the battle is changing and it's turning, and it's a very exciting time to be on this planet.
Very much so, and I have to say that, you know, I don't have the extra dimensional contacts that either of you gentlemen have. But I'm trying to make sense of this just as a researcher myself, and I would feel a little more confident in what you gentlemen were sharing if I saw fewer chemtrails over Tucson and over Phoenix. If I would see a really significant reduction or completely elimination of this clandestine activity, I would feel a little bit more confident that, yes, somewhere, some way, somebody is putting a stop to this nonsense. And that, to me, would be one of the greatest indicators that, yeah, there is a major shift going on here.
Right, James, when I spoke about this, I think I used the term 8 months. Every 6 months, the key families meet. And their portfolio holders go through it. Now, the portfolio holder was out of office for 6 months. There was a 2-month delay and changeover. And there's a lot of people on the internet saying chemtrailing had stopped. I was on record saying it had been reduced, but not stopped. Now, they have actually replaced the portfolio holder, but there has been a reduction in chemtrailing in a number of key locations. In Great Britain, it had significantly dropped off. Mm-hmm. But states, which is perhaps the battleground, it reduced but never stopped. So what we're seeing is the middle management is still in position, but they are becoming autonomous. The top group is the one that's been decimated. And this is what Wynn is saying, that we may find lesser people trying to claw their way into a vacuum. And that's the concern.
Absolutely. Well, I live here in Tucson, which is probably a third the size of Phoenix. And every time we have a low-pressure system go through here, there's increased chemtrail activity. And over the last few weeks, we've had extraordinary chemtrail activity. And Phoenix, which is just 100 miles up the road from Tucson, which is a much higher density population center, the chemtrails there are unbelievable. And, the excuse is that, you know, they want to protect the sun or the earth from the extreme, high energy particles of the sun or whatever.
Nonsense.
And of course it's nonsense, because you can see, well, they are specifically targeting population centers.
Yep.
And that is like, when I see that stop, then I'll be really impressed that somewhere, some way, somebody's putting a stop to this nonsense at the top. The other thing that a good friend, a very dear friend, has been monitoring just the last six weeks or so, is a dramatic increase in the Schumann resonance of the planet. It's like the planet is going absolutely bonkers with the Schumann resonance. And I like to think that that's a good sign that the planet itself is jumping into the fight here. But then the flip side of that is that the increased chemtrails are actually generating changes in the Schumann resonance. So could you gentlemen address that?
Yeah, I can add something to the Schumann resonance components. That's going to keep doubling. It's going to go through frequency doubling phases, and it's going to keep increasing throughout our lifetime. That process started on July the 15th, 2010. And that right. was the last genuine crop circle I ever saw. It was a confirmation that that process had been initiated. And it was known as the egg slice formation. And what that actually was actually two formations overlaid. The underlay was actually the authentication credential that allowed the connection. I know what that was because I was present when that was given. And overlaid is an image of a sphere, which is in fact the Earth. Mm-hmm. And it's known as the egg slice because it has a number of horizontal lines running across it, rather like a Venetian blind. But if you look at the slices, the lines running across, you'll see that their distance changes because they're the standing wave frequencies. They're the overtone frequencies of the Schumann resonance.
Right.
And it's showing that they actually start to double and double and double and double. Right. And this is part of the process of stimulating human consciousness on the surface of the planet. And that is the energy that's flowing through the ancient energy grid system, which we in the UK call the ley line system.
Yes.
And that's connected to human consciousness, and that will accelerate the human consciousness process of every sentient human on the planet.
So what I my sense is that the chemtrails are actually trying to dampen that effect.
Exactly. They're trying to dampen it artificially with the harp signals. Right. So they're trying to phase against the increase in the consciousness frequency by pumping energy into the upper atmosphere and trying to dampen the response.
Is this happening across the solar system with the same intensity?
No, this is specific to this planet.
It's just a planet Earth issue. Okay.
Yeah.
If we think about a virus, a human body has a virus.
Right. Yes.
The body tries to raise the temperature up. The planet is doing is exactly that. Now, the other thing that I would like Wynn to talk a little bit about, if you wouldn't mind, is how the elite would like to use fracking to damage the under
absolutely.
Control. So, yes. Wynn, at this point, it would be quite useful because I know you're quite knowledgeable on that.
Yep. Okay. In a nutshell, the energy that naturally flows around the planet, which is part of our consciousness energy field, is a grid. It's a natural grid, and it's evolved over billions of years on the planet. And it's a whole lecture to define how this works. But in its kind of trunk routing, if you can imagine this being like an internet network, the trunk routing is all through the underground water courses. That starts the process that causes the ionization entrainment, which causes the dark plasma flow, which allows effectively the system to wire itself up at a trunking level. So the main capacity goes through all the underground water courses. What they're actually trying to do with the fracking is nothing to do with cheap oil, because cheap oil and gas, it actually costs more than the existing gas to get out of the ground. In fact, the United States is going to catch a cold from the enormous amount of investment that's gone into this that is never going to be recovered. It's going to be a huge cost. The same will occur in Australia, and if we're foolish enough to do it in the UK, it'll happen here as well. The real reason for it is simply to disrupt the underground water courses so that they can try and disrupt the consciousness energy that's flowing through the ley line system and then into human consciousness.
That's really interesting, because last November we had one of the major spokesmen from the Central MUFON organization, who was a physicist and astronomer, and he gave a presentation where he publicly advocated unlimited fracking and unlimited petroleum production, because conservation efforts were blocking technological advancement. And I just almost fell out of my chair when I heard this man say this in public. And it's like, this is just totally irresponsible. Arrogant and totally irresponsible.
Well, James, I mean, we all know, don't we, that MUFON was set up by the CIA.
Oh, yes.
And he is just being a spokesperson for organization. I mean, I was a member, as an ordinary member of MUFON, for about 6 months. And I remember, this is humorous. In Great Britain at the time, there was very little connection. This is about 6 years ago. If you wanted to, you know, talk about the subject. So I thought, oh, I'll give it a try and see if I can apply to be a member of MUFON, although I'm in Great Britain. I'll give it a go. So I emailed one of the cities, I can't remember which one it was, and the reply I got back wasn't rude. The reply was, well, look, we have lots of people who report strange lights in the sky, and we're not really interested. So I wrote back and said, well, are you interested in the people who fly these things? I've got a few drawings. Would you be interested? So they emailed back, because it's about 6 hours difference between my country and that part of the States. And they emailed back and said, yeah, that's fine. So I scanned three of my drawings, sent them. Do you know, within 20 minutes of the scan going, I got the chief, or the CEO of whichever it was, came to me and said, we've just seen your drawings, and we'd like you to be a member of MUFON, and we're going to set it up. So I said, oh, that's really good. He said, well, what will happen is, you can go on the website, and, you know, you have a chat room 24 hours a day, and we can, you know, you can have a chat. So I said, oh, when can you sort that out for me? And he said to me, and I quote, it's already done. Did you know, without any passwords, no code.
Oh, wait, you didn't send in your $45?
No, didn't have to send money in. You had to send money in. Anyway, no, but what was amazing was, on my email, my private email, which I hadn't given any code words or any authority to, suddenly, on my email, all of the members of MUFON who were having a chat came up. Mm. So he was able to throw a switch which override, in Great Britain, my provider. And I mean, I'm quite okay with that, because it was all right. But I realized that MUFON were integral to the information gathering of the CIA.
Isn't there a British branch of MUFON?
No, there isn't.
So it's all American?
Absolutely.
Oh, bloody. well, yeah, the gentleman that spoke, the astronomer, physicist that spoke, I went and checked on his credentials, and he has a business that contracts with all the major players of the national security state. So it's like, this guy's just a shill for the national security state. It's like,
yep.
Well, how can he not work for MUFON without being a conflict of interest, especially at that level? And aren't the people in MUFON aware of that?
Can I just give something else, which is...
Oh, well, please do. Please, yes.
Regarding the CIA and Canada. 2 years ago, I was approached by somebody who had received a large blow-up photograph of a mantis-type alien. In fact, we call it an insectoid, not a mantis. What had happened... this creature had turned up in Canada on an ordinary doorstep, somehow got the interest of the inhabitant, who'd opened the door, and the creature stood there for 15 minutes. This young woman, who was the lived in the house, on her mobile phone took pictures of this being. She then went to MUFON. MUFON sent it straight to the CIA. The CIA then sent that to NASA and said, what can you do with this picture? Can you enlarge it? And I was very privileged. Apparently, I was one of only six people in the world who was shown this. Then they blew it up 3 foot. The picture was 3 foot by 1.5 feet. And it showed an insectoid-type creature. And if you think of the chess piece of the bishop on a game of chess, it had the same
head
as that. MUFON, the CIA are one and the same. So very interesting.
Well, if you look at how it's organized, you can clearly see that it's a clearinghouse where you get the general public to funnel UFO information into a directly centralized agency. And it's like, you know, it's virtually getting the people to work for you for free, you know? And it's like, you know, which is, you know, standard yeah. how they do things, yes.
So that they can bury the information further.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, where's that black hole? There's that black hole. We're just going to shove that information in that black hole.
Okay, let me tell you guys a story. Wendell Stevens was in Switzerland with Billy Meier when MUFON came knocking at Billy Meyer's door.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And, we're here to investigate the Billy Meier case, right? Well, Billy had, outside on his table, he had a photograph album with all the pictures that he'd taken of the Pleiadian beam ships, right? Well, the MUFON guy went up to the album and snapped pictures of the pictures that were in the album. And he walked away, and then MUFON filed a report and said the Billy Meier case was a complete hoax. I said, well, do you call that investigating? I mean, crying out loud. It's like Wendell and his team, I think, spent, I don't know how many hours, they went multiple times to Switzerland, and they said at the end of the day, they probably had spent $200,000 investigating just the Billy Meier case. And I don't think that the MUFON people spent 1995 to investigate the case. So, and the MUFON still screams loudly that the Billy Meier case is a hoax. It's like, well, how much investigation effort did you put into it? So,
yeah, no, the craft were real that Billy was seeing, but they're very old design Palladian scout ships. It's a very old design, very antiquated.
I still think they're pretty neat.
Oh yeah, they're pretty good. The way they work is pretty good.
I would bloody take a ride in one anytime. I'd hesitate. I would love to, right?
Yeah, they're very good, but that's very old tech.
Well, yeah, it's kind of like the old Hanibu tech, isn't it?
Well, the Hanibu was a variant of that provided by the Aldebarans, and the Vril Jaeger craft were a different version. The Vril Jaeger craft actually had a different purpose. They were there to tear dimensional holes around the planet, but the Hanibu was derived from the same series.
So,
while we're talking about Hanibus, Simon, do you have any intel that the craft that George Adamski photographed in Silver Spring, Maryland was actually a Hanibu, and it was probably flown by our own government?
I would agree with that.
You didn't hesitate on that, did you?
I would say that it was cannibalized from a number of... The problem is parts for these things.
Yes.
That is the problem, and to be honest with you, I wouldn't go to the moon in one of those. I just wouldn't do it. I think it's perfectly okay for flitting around the Earth and
putting on a show, exactly. A show,
but for long distance, no, because the other thing is that, no disrespect, when Earth humans make copies, they don't actually always understand and make them work. So you have a mixture of human designed machines and non-human, and they don't always talk together and work together. So a lot of these craft were, it amazed me how they work. But I would agree with that. Largely human designed, the version that you were looking at had a lot of cannibalization to it.
Yeah.
You have to also appreciate the PSYOP's potential of flying one of those things around, you know, and the poor country folk in the United States say, oh, golly gosh, it must come from Venus. It must come from the outer space, because we certainly don't make flying machines like that. And that's, you know, that's obviously the PSYOP value of that kind of technology.
Look at the guide waves. Look at the three.
Yes. Yes.
So, and the other thing is that... What, we haven't talked about it much, but one of the reasons that negative off-planet entities are so interested in humans is because if you are human, you can fly a spacecraft many times the speed of light. My own, that element of my family can only go up 4 times to 5 times the speed of light. So the human genome, the strands of DNA are very important, because if they fell into the hands of the enemy, then they would have access to very advanced time travel.
Exactly. So
right. Just about the craft.
And just think of the mischief they could create anywhere they wanted in the universe.
Absolutely. Well,
I did want to kind of, just before we get out of that situation, because I want to extrapolate a little bit. I'm aware of the Glocker device, which would counter rotate large amounts of red mercury, or what the Alderaanians call drill. And as you were saying, Wynn, it creates a dimensional portal.
Rift, yes.
Now, I just want to go further. CERN, is that scaled up to 21 miles?
Yes.
Correct.
It's
the Are they source. Trying to teleport the Earth into another dimension?
No, they're just trying to tear a hole in the interdimensional space to allow things through. That's what they're trying to do.
Not going to happen.
It's not going to happen.
We've seen it off.
No, we've seen it off a couple of times. It's not going to happen.
Where's my weasel?
Yeah, super weasel.
Weasel.
Down. This discussion topic is interesting because I've flown. I don't know if the word "flown" is correct, but I'll just go here. Back in the late summer of 1993, I took three different trips back in time from that period of summer of 1993 in the general Tucson area, back in time to the 1840s of either Western Virginia, Kentucky. And without going into all the details, essentially what the gentleman who I know as the commander of the Primary Andromeda Council Biosphere, what he told me was, we have to upphase your natural signature, your natural frequency.
Yeah.
Because as a three-dimensional human, you cannot travel through time. We must bump you up to at least becoming a fourth-dimensional human. Now, he gave me a little pill. I'm sure the pill was just a distraction for whatever else that they needed to do. But it was unequivocal what he told me in terms of, in order to get you in this ship, in this 35 to 40 foot round time jumping craft, we have to change your energy signature, and you cannot fly as a three dimensional human. You have to become a fourth dimensional human.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's exactly correct.
And I did it three times over the course of a week and a half.
Yeah, I think you'll find the pill Tolek is in fact information. It actually represents as a metaphor to your body an upgrade to allow you to reprogram yourself to actually make a transition to the fourth dimensional state for the purpose of that trip.
It looked like a little blue green, like a NyQuil gel cap.
It's just a metaphor to your consciousness to activate the programming.
It must have worked because I'm still here.
to get back to CERN just a minute, when did they start building that CERN facility? How old is that?
They started it in the early 1980s.
1980s?
Yep.
And outside of Geneva.
Yep.
Right. Okay. And when did it go online originally?
I don't know when it originally went online. I know they started work on it around 1983, to my knowledge, possibly even earlier.
Simon, do you know when it went online?
Well, in terms of trying to change the planet, 2000.
No, just to whenever it became functional. Originally became functional.
Well,
do you know when that was?
There are various parts to it. It's developed into several systems.
Right.
Yeah, there was small, and they added to it. The main unit we're looking at now became fully functional in 2010. And its design was to activate in 2012.
Oh, 2012, right. Okay, thank you.
And then through certain key astronomical dates after that. But there's always been a facility there for very many years.
Now, you said at one point that they were going to build an, another facility in Japan. Has that been derailed? Has it been canceled?
They were going to build a linear collider. That didn't happen simply because the time scale precluded the creation of it.
Do they have any other plans to create another CERN anyplace else?
Yes, but that's actually coming from Putin. Putin saying he wants to build his own device as a counteract to the one that America has.
You know, in the movie Stargate and the TV series, they show a big Stargate CERN kind of thing that's in orbit. Do you think they would ever try something outrageous like that?
You need the Earth. You can't.
Yeah. It's using the Earth's energy to actually affect create the effect they require. That's why it's buried in the ground. That's why it's like a large circular antenna. It's a transdimensional transducer. But it's using the Earth's energy field to amplify that in the torsion range that they want.
I got you. Go ahead.
If I may jump in. Simon, no. I'm not sure if I'm going to say this correctly, but please comment on what I'm about to say. Is it accurate to say that, if you will, the powers that are responsible for initiating the Hadron Colliders, that their purpose is to rip a hole in the fabric of time space so that they could allow some of their other dimensional buddies to come through?
Absolutely correct. The object was to create something in the range of 30 to 40 meters. That didn't happen. They punched a hole, maybe half a millimeter. They had established communications with the fourth dimension.
Yeah, I was told 0.8 of a millimeter.
Okay, I got 0.5, but we won't argue on that.
All right.
And they established communications, but that's small beer, as we say in Britain, because their whole object was to bring reinforcements in. You see, all the other portals are now guarded and protected.
Mm-hmm.
So can't get through. be vaporized. So this was a way of opening a back door to bring reinforcements in, and that, of course, has failed.
It was also suggested that back during the 1940s, 1945, when they started doing atmospheric testing with atomic bombs, that they were also that was also designed to tear holes in the fabric of time space. Do you understand that? Is correct also?
Was that wasn't coming from humans? That was coming from off planet entities in an attempt to make it possible for them to come in and play God in terms of past, future, and present.
And there have been over 1,000 nuclear bomb tests since then. It's like your imagination can go wild on what all kind of mischief has been allowed into this planet because of that.
Right, but the important thing here is those things are not permanent. They heal.
Right. Okay.
The things that the Americans did in the mid-40s with their ship, that created holes which are still permanent. But the atomic bomb can actually, the damage there can heal over time. So that isn't.
So it's not a long-term thing. Whereas the CERN would be more long-term.
Well, the CERN one was to, if you imagine a tube that is collapsing and you force air into it,
uh-huh.
It's already existing, tunnel, but it is collapsing as Earth moves further and further away from the galactic center. So many of these portals are collapsing, and their object is to beef up this portal, this tube, a bit like a mine shaft, and the great weight of the rock is crashing down on it. You put more timbers in to try to shore it up.
Sure.
You know, we've gone past the point now, and people keep writing to me worried about CERN, and I say to them, please don't worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
It cannot achieve now the preventative.
No, it can't achieve the energy levels it requires now because the alignments are gone.
Well, also, I would think that the increase in the Schumann resonance level would throw off all their calculations also. It's like, you know, what worked yesterday or worked, you know, in 2012 wouldn't work today because of the shift in the Schumann resonance.
That's a part of it, but it's the absolute energy level and the alignment of the planetary bodies at the time that they had a relatively small window to be able to do this, and they missed the window.
Right. And in concert with what Wynne just said, this planet, as part of the solar system, is traveling through an area of space where the energies are very dynamic.
Yep.
And also, I'm not sure if this is the right word, but highly magnetic. And so as a result, we're looking at a different set of energies which are far more erratic and unpredictable than before.
Yep.
My words may not be exact, but I'm not a scientist.
Tollett, you're absolutely right. It cannot be predicted. And one of the main reasons that CERN could have worked was that they had it absolutely docked to a T. That's why the window of opportunity for them was so small. That's when CERN was taken down twice effectively and once half effectively. It was taken down at key points, which when they missed one, they had to throw everything into the second one. They missed the second, third. They're finished. That was a massive machine, which countless billions have been put into. Only have worked in 2 to 3 days.
Black budget money.
Yeah, and it's just disgraceful that that money, which could have been used to make people's lives better, was thrown away. And you know, it had to be stopped. It had to be stopped because one of the other possibilities was to break the connection that humans have with consciousness. That was something else they were toying with, which is profane and evil, and that couldn't be allowed to happen.
It is, Simon would be accurate to say that our connection to consciousness throughout the cosmos is because of the true nature of who we really are, which is an energy, a light body, that uses an organic body as an avatar.
Because every good living creature on this planet contains a energy soul that was created by Source. There is a contract between the creational force and its creation, which cannot be broken, but some people try to break. Even if they say, well, look, it's never going to happen, but we can't sit back in our armchairs. We have to do something. And that's why my group, the Connecting Consciousness Group, and I know many, many people around the world took part in this group meditation to distract and concern from operating. We were successful. And I have no... I have just only words of praise for all those humble people throughout the planet. And there was one off-planet entity group as well that became... really made sure that CERN could never operate again. And I think even Wynne showed me some pictures that we had of aerial photography which showed that the planet herself played a hand and produced... under lightning storms over the power generators.
Yeah, I was monitoring the situation in real time as it was unfolding, and yes, the planet actually came in and lent a hand, came out of nowhere to help.
Well, I dare say that Mother Sophia is fully aware of what's going on here, and she's not going to sit back and just let the bad guys take over. I think
exactly.
Sophia is a brilliant, very aware consciousness, and I think she's, at the end of the day, she's fully in charge.
And at the end of the day, she's our absolute backstop against AI. Our connection to Sophia is the one thing that gives us dominion over it.
I will say I did have a recent channeling from Sophia, and that's precisely what she said.
Listen, guys, I'm getting really tired because I've obviously did 2 hours show tonight with JP, my regular show, and now with Milter. So I'd have done 4 hours. So I'm going to just say goodbye to you. But before I do, Tolek, yes, I'm up for your conference if it's still going on.
Oh my God, terrific.
Thank you. That is fantastic.
But I can't fly there, but if you can put a Skype connection on, I would do a presentation to your group. I did that actually for the Nexus in Australia. I did a live 1 hour presentation to Nexus. And what we did, we had two screens, one screen for the audience to see me and a second screen where I could put my visuals up for them. So if we have a chat, you know, at some point, then we could work on that.
Simon, you need to understand this is a joint project with Tolek and myself.
Oh, I didn't know
so
that.
I'm absolutely thrilled, and thank you so much. I can't express my appreciation for that.
And we're also fortunate to have a guy with the two initials of JD, who's our version of Win Keech, essentially. And so I dare say we have some access to some pretty serious technology.
Oh yes.
So Simon, thank you.
Yes. Well, listen. God bless everybody. Good night. Win, even though you pull my leg, I love you very much.
You're pretty good for a repto, it must be said. Good
Simon.
Night, my friend.
Simon, before you go, just like to say good night from the chat room. Please give our thanks to Simon from the chat room. We've still got 60 people in here. We had over 100 in the early hours of the shows. So that's really good.
All right, listen,
Simon.
Good night, Simon.
It's always a pleasure. Thank you.
Good night, Simon.
Good night, Simon. Thank you for joining us.
God bless everybody.
You too.
So we got about 6 or 7 minutes just to go. Thank you for all coming, and indeed thank you, Simon, as well for being a major trooper. So what do we say about the Pleiadians then, you know, in the last few minutes? Well, you know, a few words about, like, where are we headed in terms of how do we integrate our all of our histories so that we all come out on top?
Well, I would say for myself that one of the things that actually I learned is that, and the Pleiadians actually told me, it's just like, don't be in awe of us. It's like, you know, you have this power. You have the same power that we have. We are no better than you. And it's like, learn to acknowledge and, you know, be in your own power. Own your own power. And it's, that's your responsibility living here on this planet. So don't wait for, you know, the good guys. If you think the good guys are going to come and rescue you, I don't think they will. It's like we have a responsibility to do this for ourselves. And it's like if they will help us as much as we help ourselves. And I think that's what we have to do.
I agree completely. It's all about taking responsibility for ourselves and
Absolutely.
Taking responsibility for our environment, the planet we live on.
Exactly. Right. Be nice to your mother.
Yeah, and also to try and evolve all the species. You know, you can see how, you know, it's taken 120 million years, but, you know, Simon and I are best friends. Back then, we'd be trying to beat each other to death with a stick or something. So, you know, we're all evolving, and this is a major transition point, and I think it's important that we all try to evolve anybody that's capable of evolving at this point, all species.
Well, like I said, Wynn, I would just love to spend an evening just sitting chit-chatting with you and Simon. I think it would be a hoot and a half.
It gets quite funny.
And better yet, what the hell? Let's do a conference together. Let's do
I want to do one. Come over. We'll, you know, I can probably put you guys up and we'll have a small audience and it'll be a really cool, intimate affair, but we can record it all. YouTube it and you know, make an audio visual event of it. A multimedia event, yeah.
Exactly.
So, Tolek, one last.
Yes.
Final.
Well, thank you.
Yes.
One last row. Simon mentioned it, and as long as he mentioned it, I'm happy to bring it up. My good friend Jim Nichols, JD, we are collaborating together, and we will be co-sponsoring the 2016 Transformational Shift Conference, which will be held in the... Thank you.
Thank you.
That was great. I love it. Man with a sense of humor. Which will take place.
the weekend of October the 21st through the 23rd in beautiful greater Phoenix, Arizona. The website is transformationalshiftevents.com, and I expect the page for people to be able to purchase tickets will be live within about 3 or 4 days from now. I know there are a lot of people that have been after me and Jim to be able to buy tickets, and we have to nail down the venue, and that's what's on top of the agenda this week. But if people go to the Transformational Shift Events website, they'll see all of the great speakers that we have lined up. And, gee, if we can do Simon via Skype, when would you be interested in popping in as well?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Great.
I'm no stranger to Phoenix. I've actually had to do business there some years ago. So, yes, I know it quite well. So that'd be great.
Excellent.
I very much remember the statue of the Navajo code talkers in the center of Phoenix there. I was quite taken with that.
Yes. Yeah. If we were a man of unlimited means, we'd fly you over.
That's okay. I know Skyping is fine.
Okay. Alrighty.
Let's do more of this. Let's do more of that. We've got a lot of education to give. We've got a big picture that we need to learn ourselves. And I'm sure that with this group and with other appending groups, I'd like to bring in some female energy into the situation as well. I might start having more round tables and then bring further together that can then become conferences. And those who can't attend the country, you know, we just use the Skype link. No problem. We do it all the time. You know, let's do this thing. What do you think? This has been Ever Beyond. It's been another historic ultra-galactic moment. Thank you very much, Wynn Keach, Jim Nichols, Tolek, Simon Parks. Good night, everybody.
Thanks, JP.
Beyond.